I think I want to be very Quakerly today and sort of change the order of what we're doing. I think I want to say a few words first, and then we will enter into our time of waiting together. Perhaps you'll understand why. I remember when I was a kid up in South Whitley, our school playground had one of those old merry-go-rounds, the really big ones, and the best thing you could hope for is to have a bunch of big kids grab hold of it and run as fast as they could around and then hop on, and you'd have to close your eyes and hold on as tight as you could because it looked like the whole world was just spinning, and if you let go, you would go flying off. But one of the things that I also discovered during that time is if you move from the edge to the middle of the merry-go-round, you find almost complete stillness. That moving to the center is the place where everything looks different. We Quakers use the word centering all the time. Often on Sunday morning, before the reading of Scripture, the worship leader will say what? To help us center, Rick has chosen that we hear these words this morning. Or to help us center down, I'm going to read from the book of... What are we talking about? Why do we say that? I want to be as simple as I can with you this morning. I hope this is especially helpful for those of you who have come among us from a different background. There are so many folks who become friends after having been Christians of another variety. And I think this is one of the really important things to help you, but also the rest of us who've been at this for a long time, to think for a moment about what it is we're talking about. I want to say this as simply as I can. When we center, or when we center down, as we sometimes say, we're turning toward that which occupies the most important place within us. That place around which then the rest of our lives is centered. The center is that place where we encounter what is most stable, most unchanging, most deeply inward. In short, for Quakers, the center is the place where we meet God and where God meets us. When we throw around phrases like that of God in every person or the Christ within, we're talking about this most central place where we can commune with God. So when we engage in what we call open worship, or waiting in silence upon the Lord, or the other various things, communion after the manner of friends, we're talking about taking a moment and turning to this most inward place. And so I suggest that it can be especially true this morning. Let's hear these words to help us center down. I think Psalm 46 can provide some real help for us in doing that. And in order to keep it simple, I see three words in there, three images that might help us to get a greater sense of what it is we're doing. You know, the Psalms are just full of what I call God pictures. And all kinds of folks, including our own Elton Trueblood, said that if we're going to talk about God, that's all we have. In other words, all talk about God has to rely on metaphor, on word pictures. You know, I've needed so much help today. I ran off without my belt, and I had to call my wife to bring it down for me, because I guess I now need adult supervision when I dress in the morning. And thank you for pointing out that I didn't have the microphone on. I don't think has everybody been able to follow me? Have I been close enough to the, okay. You know, that's what we do in our children's sermon every week, actually. Most of the time, it's finding some God picture either in a book or some object lesson that probably teaches the kids a little bit, but it mainly teaches us adults who think in word pictures mainly about God. The Bible is filled with word pictures, metaphor, and especially the Psalms then has powerful pictures to help us know how to commune with God. No metaphor can get it completely. All we can say is that God is like a rock, or God is like a mother hen, or that means that gives us one angle. And that's why we need lots of word pictures. And the Psalms, as I said, is just filled with metaphors, word pictures to help us. So I've chosen Psalm 46 because among the many pictures in that one song, I found three that I think can really help us understand what we're talking about when we center. These can truly be words to help us center. And the three words start with an R, and I didn't choose that to be cute. I did it to maybe help us remember when we go away from this place what the three words are. Three word pictures to help us center. And the first one is, and Jill already mentioned it, the word refuge. A refuge is quite simply a protected space. It is somewhere to which we can go in safety and security. Notice the pictures for the word trouble here in Psalm 46. Earthquakes, crumbling mountains, tidal waves. You ever feel like that's what life was doing to you at the moment? You ever been in that situation? If not literally, I mean experientially, that it felt like the whole world was just kind of crumbling. So a refuge is a place where we find safety even while all that is going on. Think of a storm cellar. Or think of one of those underground bunkers where all the generals and political leaders go during a time of attack. Or a better picture of a refuge that all of us, I hope, at one point could relate to is simply a loving mother into whose arms we go to just hear the words, "It'll be okay. You're going to be all right. Don't be afraid." Or a spouse to whom you can return at the end of a terrible day where things either hurt you or made you mad or really discouraged you, that you can go home to this person who is there with listening ears, with a loving heart, with words of encouragement and words of understanding, a refuge. And if your home is not a refuge, I encourage you to find ways to help make it more so. It is a great gift, and that is, as all these human word pictures are, a reflection of the kind of relationship that God wants to have with us. Or a meeting for worship can be a refuge, a place where we gather every week, and we feel safe and secure enough that we can stand, sometimes with tears in our eyes, and say, "What's going on in our life right now?" And sort of, if not in words, at least in the sense we have and in the hugs and the words we hear from people later, that we hear you, that we love you, that we're here if you need us. Again, a picture of God, our refuge. Whatever earthquakes and tidal waves are going on in our lives out there. We can center down in the one who is our refuge. Second word is river. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God. Unlike many ancient cities, Jerusalem has no river or stream that runs into it. And if you know anything about the history of this people and this great city, they were under siege from this empire or that for centuries. Well, scholars say that actually this probably refers to some underground streams that ran beneath the city, that flowed, from which water could be found. Or some even suggest that there probably was a tunnel built into the city from outside through which water would come in, because water sustains life. You can't live very long without water. Your body, experts say, is about, as an adult, at least 60% water. Water is life-sustaining. It occurred to me the other day that you can probably tell how old a friends meeting is if there is the word river in it. I began my pastorate at West River Friends, which was founded in the 1820s, next to a no longer existing creek, West River. I think of other ones right offhand. Little Blue River Friends down in, is it Morris, near Morristown? It's either Rush County or Shelby County. I can't remember which. Again, a very old meeting. Fall Creek Friends out by Pendleton, where I often worship when I'm on vacation, founded in the 1830s. Whitewater Friends, you could probably go on and on with the names of friends meetings that have a river in it. Well, the reason for that is that rivers at that time played a very important role, not just in supplying water, but getting there. That's why cities are founded often on rivers, because they also provided transportation. Life-sustaining water flowing in. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God. That is, those who live with God are assured of a stream of life-giving water always coming in. And I want to suggest to you not only that this is the steadfast love of God that flows to us to keep our souls alive, but also we might think of our meeting for worship, our waiting time, when someone receives words to stand and share, that person is drinking from the stream that makes glad the city of God. Remember Jesus said, he stood up at one of the festivals and said, whoever comes to me who is thirsty can drink and never be thirsty again, because as the scriptures say, out of his heart shall flow a stream of living water. Water that makes glad the heart of those who live with God, and it flows clean and fresh continuously. The early Quaker, Isaac Pennington, by the way, Chris, I was glad to hear in your sermon when I listened to it last week that you had quoted Pennington. He's also one of my favorites. I recommend him highly. He was encouraging early friends with words that echo here. He said, there is a river, a sweet flowing river, the streams whereof will make glad thy heart, and learn but in quietness and stillness to retire to God and wait upon the Spirit, in whom thou shalt feel peace and joy in the midst of thy troubles from the cruel and vexatious spirit of this world. He was obviously reflecting the words of Psalm 46. Where is God in the picture here? The center. The place where this life-sustaining love of God flows continually, no matter what else surrounds us, even when we're under siege by life. This is a promise. This is an assurance that people who have followed this path can assure you is there because they've felt it. How many of you can say yes to this? You have felt this stream that kept your soul alive. A refuge, a river, and finally, the word rest. Be still and know that I am God. Be still. Stop talking. Quit fighting. Rest. You know, when I was a kid, I heard that phrase, be still, a lot. And it usually meant sit down and be quiet because we're trying to do this or that. But you know, that's an important part of centering in God. We need to quiet the internal talking, because that's what thinking actually is. Our thinking is like an incessant talking in our heads. And all the early Quaker teachers, and actually since that time, have encouraged us that if we want to enter into this place where we find refuge and where the stream of living water flows, that we've got to be still. We got to stop this other noise in there. I think Fox used the phrase something like, be cool from thine own thoughts. I got to think. Well, I don't think you do. No wonder George Fox gave this advice to the early friends. He said this, therefore, be still a while from thy own thoughts, searching, seeking, desires, and imaginations, and be stayed in the principle of God in thee. To stay thy mind upon God, up to God, and thou wilt find strength from him, and find him to be what? A present help in time of trouble. Now, where did he find that phrase? Psalm 46. Being still also means to rest, to relax, to cease our frantic activity, to stop being a human doing instead of a human being. There has to be everybody, I've said this, and it's something I have to be reminded of all the time, is to let go. Let go of the controls. If I continue holding my weapons with all my might, throwing spears, shooting arrows at every threat that I feel, I'm pretty much unable to center at all. You know why? Because I'm still controlled by fear. You ever think of it that way? These people who are warlike all the time, who attack back 10 times harder than what the person did to offend them, that's fear-based. That's being enemy-focused. If I'm constantly enemy-focused, always focusing on what I think threatens me, I am literally restless, restless. But the invitation to center down is a call away from all that. Be still. Know that I am God. Let go of your weapons. Know that God's with you. Rest in the one who's the God of all the earth, even over these things that threaten you. This is the God who is over those as well, whether they be people or events or whatever the circumstance might be. Take your hands off the controls. Know that you can stop pretending to be God. Release your grip. Release your grip. And know that your life's in good hands. Be still. Know that I am God. I want to leave you with these words finally from my favorite, A Testament of Devotion by Thomas Kelly. And I want you to, as we get ready to move into open worship now, if you would close your eyes and just take in the words and hear the invitation and the encouragement here. Would you join me in this? Some of you know this holy recreating center of eternal peace and joy and live in it day and night. Some of you may see it over the margin and wistfully long to slip into that amazing center where the soul is at home with God. Be very faithful to that wistful longing. It is the eternal goodness calling you to return home.